The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 449. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this episode of the PVD Cast. And I actually marvel at the fact that the very next episode will be 450, and I just want to take 1 minute or maybe 2 minutes maximum out of this intro to say thank you to everyone who's ever listened to an episode. Thank you to those who support the PVD Cast, no matter if we're talking about World's Greatest Comics, who have been a great sponsor throughout the years. But I also mean those people that just tell other folks about it, because word of mouth advertising is oftentimes the most effective advertising, and it's the cheapest too. So thank you for everything that you have done. If you are a listener, or if you've done anything to help the podcast grow, I truly do appreciate it, and thank you so very much. But now, let's get into this episode, because I am super excited for this episode. Joining me to talk about all things acting is an actor who is one busy fellow, and he's on one of my favorite television shows. I'm talking about Mr. James Dumont. He is, of course, the gentleman that portrays the character Chad on The Righteous Gemstones, and it was awesome to sit down and talk to him to get a little bit of the behind-the-scenes look at how things go on that set when it comes to that awesome television show, and what it's like to work with his son on the show and work with Danny McBride, too. And you're going to hear James really, really passionately talk about that program. It's wrapped up its fourth season, but who knows how long it's going to last. So, you know what? I promised him that I would make sure that you all know it's an awesome show. If you love comedy, there's not a funnier man on the planet than Danny McBride, and his projects always kill it and always crush it. So definitely check out The Righteous Gemstones if you get a chance. It's available on HBO Max, all three seasons, with a fourth season coming very soon. But I am actually doing a disservice because, as I mentioned before, James has over 170 projects to talk about. We talk about a couple of them. We also talk about how James is sharing his knowledge about acting to a new crop of actors and actresses through his OnCameraWorkouts.com program. So it's an awesome episode, one that I can't wait to get to. So I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with James Dumont. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening, I am sitting down with an actor who is probably one of the busiest actors in stage, television, movies. I'm talking about Mr. James Dumont. James, how are you this evening?
I'm good, John. Good to see you.
Good to and see you. Yeah. We had a few technical issues early on.
Exactly. But I think so now we got a little bit of both. It's good. We're working.
There
great.
We go. Knock on wood, we'll be A-okay. So
that's right. Done.
You know what? Starting out with that statement that you are a very busy man, and I mean, we could talk all night about the resume that you have with all of your different projects. I wanted to start off by asking, when you're not working, how do you manage that work-life balance?
It's a good one. I'm constantly kind of doing and evolving at this point. You know, it's kind of like, my oldest is grown and off on their own and working full time. So like they're in their own, you know, a young adult life. Mm-hmm. And my youngest is like, also he's on the Righteous Gemstones with me. We just finished our fourth season on HBO's The Righteous Gemstones. And so he's finishing his third year of college. So, you know, you spend the first 20 or something years of your life with, spend the last 20 years of your life kind of just raising your children, you know? So it's like, yeah, now it's daddy time. And, so one of the things I do, I've been teaching, I started coaching actors specifically for self-tapes over the last 9 years. And so when I am not auditioning and actively auditioning or on set or doing something, I'm usually coaching somebody all over the world. I have about 2,000 students all over the world. I started a thing called On-Camera Workouts, which is oncamerworkouts.com. And it's a place where we do lots of things on Monday nights. Like tomorrow night, we'll be developing original content. So for the last 4 years, I've been helping actors create their own pilots, TV shows, you know, one-man shows, feature films, short films. We've had about 20 short films, you know, played all over the world that were developed from our Monday Funday lab. And then I coach people privately for their self-tapes to help them with that or to put their materials together to get an agent. And then I do two classes a week. I do a day class focusing on self-tapes, and then I do a night class, again, focusing on core work and fundamentals of how do you take material from, you know, getting the script to turning it into a self-tape and sending it off, you know, and all the things that go along with that. So, and I've been a Buddhist of 36 years. So, you know, I chant, I have a, you know, faith. And so that's a very big part of my, you know, a couple times a day, I chant. So, and then beyond that, you know, my wife and I, we have a lovely kind of life in New Orleans. I live in New Orleans. And so it's much more relaxed. They call it the Big Easy for a reason. Like today, for example, we just got up and we went and there's a barbecue and a blues fest. And we just got in the car and parked there. And there were food booths. And I listened to a couple of really great blues musicians and had some, you know, barbecue and some corn. And, you know, it was just a lovely Sunday day, watching a little of the Suns game, Saints game. And it was like, yeah, it's just a much more relaxed kind of high quality of life than what I had. As much as I enjoyed my life in New York and Los Angeles, this is a much more relaxed, easy place to stay. Although I still have an apartment in New York and I still have a place to stay in LA. So I'm pretty much tri-coastal, you know. And then when in the heyday of when it's really, really busy, you know, I'm doing job interviews. I'm doing 50 to 100 self-tapes in a given year, you know. And in a good year, I'll get 5. Which means the other 90, 95 or so are, you know, like we're just 100% effort, but it's not a no, it's just a not right now. So yeah, that's, you know, I kind of busy myself with a lot of stuff. I started writing a little bit more. I'm going to get back to producing again, just because there's been such a constriction of the business. So many people are really, really suffering financially, creatively, and really, you know, pivoting and finding other ways to do something else. This has been a very, between COVID and then the two, you know, crushing strikes, it's been very difficult for people to kind of continue and sustain. Had I not had my students, not just on a financial, but really more on a creative level, I'm not sure. I think, I'm 40 years in and 170 credits. So as my wife would say, I'm over invested. You know, I'm all in. I've been all in for a long time. So I'm not interested in doing anything else. So rather than waiting for the business to kind of come back to some semblance of normalcy, which it may never not be, you know, mm-hmm. It may never not be the same. I feel like I'd like to create, now it's my time to start doing the things I want to do. Maybe get back to the theater. I haven't done a live theater performance since my oldest was born 23 years ago. So getting back on the stage is something I definitely want to do, because AI can't replace that. So that's always a good thing. So yeah, I'm mid career right now, you know. I'm trying to figure out what the next thing is that I have many things that interest me, a lot of things that excite me. When the opportunities, you know, as few and far between as they've come my way, I've made the most of them as I possibly can. But when so many people are out of work, they have so many choices to choose from. It has nothing to do with me or my work. You know, I just do my best and send it off and wait for the next one, you know, or not really wait. I just keep creating.
You mentioned that you are Buddhist. If you don't mind me asking, could you talk to us a little bit about the journey of becoming Buddhist?
I started chanting Nam-myoho-renge-kyo about 36 years ago. My cousin introduced me to the practice. It's older than Christianity in terms of Buddhism itself, but there's something about, and again, this is not a proselytizing in any particular, you know, sense of the way, but having whenever someone finds a way to keep their condition of life buoyant and take responsibility for everything that happens to them, which is not what everybody really wants to do. You know, I think what happens is, and not look outside of themselves for their happiness, success, or their, you know, or their enlightenment, you know, really looking inside and finding, you know, inherently that each one of us, this is what I ultimately believe, is each one of us has inherent and eternal potential. And so every life is important. I think that's when you start to look at everybody as an equal potential possibility, I think there'd be less wars, you know? And so for me, I feel like I'm responsible for my own happiness. And I also think I have to take responsibility for how other people respond to me and what I may be putting out there. So for me, I just focus on, I chant every day in order to kind of check in with my condition of life in the morning and the evening, because we wake up in one mindset, you know, in the beginning of the day, and then the other end of the day, it's something else. But if there's not any, this is what I think is most interesting about this practice, you know, and many people do it. You know, Tina Turner is mostly known for being, you know, one of the, you know, the godmothers of our practice, and Patrick Duffy and Dylan McDermott, and you know, a lot of other people that I've known for. There's over, I don't know, 17 million people that practice this sect of Buddhism all over the world. So, but for me, it's an interesting to be a 21st century Buddhist and not to be looking at a philosophy or ideology that may stem older than Christianity, but how does one navigate their condition of life in the modern world? How does one not be triggered or reactive by, you know, ignorant, poisonous people that are trying to point out the differences between us as opposed to what we have in common with each other? And that's how ignorant and that's how dictators rule, is to point out how different we are from each other, as opposed to you and I have, we both have one heart. We both have two lungs. I hope you have two. I have two. So the point is,
I have two.
Yeah. I think the thing is, world peace happens on an individual basis. If one is fundamentally unhappy, or they blame other people for why their life is the way it is, and don't take responsibility for all the things that happen, that's where we get into problems, or blame other people for the reasons why their life is not the way it is. So for me, I had to take a little bit more of a personal responsibility for my life. However, my circumstances, you know, we call that, you know, they call the word karma, which basically just means life tendencies, but everybody's born into certain circumstances. But I also inherently believe that everybody has the potential to turn it all around. You know, that if you look at life as eternal, and that you have this finite period of time while you're on the planet physically, the question is, what the hell do you do with your life as it is? For me, I just felt like I needed something that had some sort of consistency and continuity, that wasn't looking outside for some sort of deity or something to decide how my life was going to be governed. That at the end of the day, just like gravity, I don't have to have faith or belief or understand the scientific principles of gravity, but if I step out a second story window, I'm going to fall. There are certain laws of nature. So I'm governed by the law of cause and effect. Every thought, every word, every action has a cause, positive or negative. And if I take more of a individual responsibility for how I treat people, how I think about myself and others, and how I try to be of service, meaning how I try to make as many positive causes as I possibly can, I've found over the 36 years of, you know, delving into this kind of personal responsibility for my own happiness and my own little world peace, is that the greater the causes, the greater the positive causes that I try to share with others through my work and through even you and I having this conversation, like that's a positive cause that that will have some sort of ripple effect in the world. If I can just focus on that as much as possible, I don't need to really worry about the effects. You know, the effects will, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have to worry about, you know what I mean? Like, as I said, I use the analogy of gravity as a law of nature. Cause and effect is a law of nature. And so just being mindful and governing how I treat myself and others, I think is a, it's not a bad way to be. And again, whatever anyone's faith, because I have lots of friends who are born again Christians and who have, you know, are, I have friends who are, you know, a part of the Mormon church. And at the end of the day, however one manifests their faith in their family and their everyday life, I'm fine with that. That's true faith to me, is how it works into your everyday life. And I'm not saying mine is any more superior than anyone else's, but at the end of the day, it's either philosophy or it's you know, or ideology, or it's a way of living, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you can be a great philosopher, but it's like, how happy are you? Are you really living? And I think ultimately, I'm just trying to live up to what I think inherently I'm capable of, and that may be beyond what my mind or heart may think. And I try to instill that in other people, especially with my students, is that, you know, a lot of my students are coming at this much later in their life. They've done all these things for their, you know, like same thing. I've raised kids. Now they're having this time for themselves that I've always wanted to do this. I always wanted to be a storyteller and I became a lawyer or I did all these things in order. Now this is my time to be able to kind of be this person. And so, you know, so no matter where you're at, I always try to teach people where they're at. And, you know, I always mark the greatest teachers and mentors that I've had is they've been able to kind of speak to various different people who are at various different stages, you know, like the great teachers kind of figure out what they need. So I liken what I do to being like a corner man in boxing. You know, I'm not an acting teacher. I teach many different acting philosophies, but I call it when I see it. You know what I mean? I'm not your coach and I'm not your trainer. I'm the corner man. I just kind of point out things. I just guide people in a way, you know, like, and so that's been kind of a metaphor for like my life, you know. I think early on, I used to set all these dreams, goals, and aspirations. I had lists. I have New Year's resolutions. I had quarterly goals. I had weekly goals. I mean, you know, I chanted about, and not just chanting, I took action. And I think that's the interesting component of this practice, is that you're kind of, it's not a meditative state of which you take yourself to a mountaintop and extract yourself from the world. You are looking, checking in with where you're at every day, twice a day. And then what actions do you take from that information that you kind of gather, you know? So there is a meditation to it, but it's active. And also you're bringing out your desires, you're bringing out your wishes, you know? Because we all have dreams, hopes, and aspirations. The question is like, where do I start? You know, what do I do? Rather right. than just sitting about it and posting on Instagram that you're, you know, there's so much more to that. So yeah, for me, I found something that really unlocks my potential on a consistent basis. You know, I try to make as many positive causes as I possibly can, you know, and let the effects speak for themselves, you know, and it's served me well thus far.
All right, let's talk about a couple of your projects here. Let's start off with American Sports Story, where you play a detective assigned to the Aaron Hernandez case. What are some of the hurdles that you had to overcome for the role? Because I imagine when the story is so well known and there's so much publicity, that there can be much more difficulty in acting as any of these characters. Am I right or wrong on that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I've had the luxury and the privilege of playing a lot of historical characters. I did that in Trumbo. I did that in even Deepwater Horizon. I did that in the Butler opposite Robin Williams. When you have historical characters, it gives you an opportunity. Like I just did an audition for something that's based on a historical character. And I was like, oh yeah, man. You know, the material was only a couple of pages of dialogue. So it wasn't heavy dialogue for me. So I spent 90% of my time doing research. Like I need to know, what's this guy wear? Like, what did he do? Like, I got to try to do as much research as I possibly can. And with this case, with the American Sports Story, yeah, a lot of people know, I think people know the basics of this story, but just like all great Ryan Murphy's stories, which I'm happy to say I've worked for Ryan Murphy three times. I did two seasons of American Horror Story. I did Coven opposite Sarah Paulson, dear friend. And then I did Freak Show with Sarah Paulson, Jessica Lange, and Kathy Bates, my college buddy, Michael Chiklis. And so, you know, Ryan Murphy likes to kind of dig a little bit deeper. And so this is a 10-episode series on Hulu FX. You know, with Aaron Hernandez, lucky for me, like I because I worked in Boston a good deal, I did Patriots Day for Peter Berg. That was my second film for him. And then the third film I did was Spencer Confidential, which we shot for 3 months in Boston. So I spent a lot of time in Boston. I went to school there. It's like a second city for me. Next to New York, I'd say Boston is the place that I spend the most time. And so in there, one of my students is actually a former, you know, he's currently a state trooper for Massachusetts, and he knew Detective Arrighi. So I picked up the phone and I talked to him and got a little bit of background. My character, Detective Arrighi, actually breaks the case. He's the one that comes in. He's comes in episode 8 and 9 of 10. And there is a lot of circumstantial, there's a lot of physical evidence, more circumstantial than physical, but he's the one that really starts to connect the dots between video footage, between monitoring pings off of cell phones, physical evidence that's there, interrogation of a couple of the witnesses or so, going backwards and how he built these kind of alliances with the darker side of, you know, society that really led to his, you know, demise, you know, beyond all that. So yeah, for me, I like doing research. So when I get a good historical character, you know, and even in The Banker, that was based on that's a real historical person as well. So the more, you know, that's out there for me to kind of do his research, it helps me a great deal. Sometimes if it's not based on historical, then I'm just 100% working off the script and I can create and fill in the gaps as I see fit based on the material. But when you have somebody's a historical character, yeah, it becomes a CSI. I get to dust off the fingerprints and look at all the blood spatter and, you know, and gauge, you know, like I get to go through all. And this particular detective, had all of those things kind of going on, just like you see in most of the detective shows or most of the higher crime things, you know, where they have the evidence wall. It was it was 2-3 walls of stuff in terms of trying to connect the dots. So that web was trying to put everybody together was not an easy thing to do, that puzzle piece, but it was 2-3 walls that were, you know, that took up to try to figure it all out. So I'm happy to be the guy that did that, you know, and I found out a little bit about him personal wise. A little bit about, I played around with the dialect a little bit in my audition, but maybe a few words when it came to the show, because no one was really kind of, you know, remembering that. You know, the irony is I ended up doing that audition in July, an hour before the SAG strike was called. I got it in just before the deadline, for the midnight cutoff. And then I didn't hear anything till Christmas, which is a long, long time because of the strikes. Nobody came back till like October, November. But right between Christmas and New Year's, I got a call and I was up for a couple of roles. So I just didn't know which role it was. And he had three projects going on in New York. And so, you know, I had to wait 6 months and I didn't get on set till February. So I did the interview in July, but I didn't start working till February, which is that's much longer than I'm used to, especially for television.
Well, let's talk about another project that most recently just came out, Unit 234, where it's kind of an action, drama, mystery, all kind of rolled into one, where you play Leon.
Yeah. So
what did you do to prepare for this character of Leon?
Yeah, this was a really great, this was one of those wonderful opportunities for me. I got to play Don Johnson's bodyguard and chauffeur, you know, all in one. I'm his henchman, his driver, his gopher. This is a really good thriller. We're waiting to find out what streamer is going to pick us up. I think there was a talk about a theatrical for a little while. I think with a lot of the strikes and, you know, people not being able to kind of promote the project. So that was a little bit of a challenge for us. I'm hoping now that, you know, like that Don's on Netflix that, we might get a deal with Netflix. I'm putting it out there for that. Really cool little thriller, Jack Huston from Mayfair Witches and Boardwalk Empire. Amazing actor from the Huston family, you know, Angelica and John Huston and Danny Huston. So really great, you know, historical film family. And then Isabel Furman from the Orphan films. Like she's was the other lead in there. And we had a look, we shot 6 weeks in Grand Cayman Island. You know, it's like, come on. You're shooting it. Like I was just having a conversation with one of my dear friends who's doing it, you know, a really interesting down and dirty kind of passion project with now a, you know, kind of a fallen A-list Oscar winning actor that's this movie could probably bring him back. He goes, I'm having this incredible experience, man. He goes, I'm just not used to, I'm wondering when the shoe's going to, you know, when the other shoe's going to drop. And I was like, dude, you got to stop thinking that way. That's just not the way to think. I said, every once in a while, you put in your time, you do, you know, like, as I said, I do 100 job interviews a year. Maybe I'll get 5, you know, it doesn't, but I put everything in all those other 95. I just do my best every time. And then all of a sudden you get this gig where, you know, Unit 234, where we're shooting mostly at night. So I have the day free to go on scuba diving, get my petty license, you know, you know, like I'm, you know, making sure I don't get sunburn, you know, and I'm eating incredible food and I'm, you know, in the most, I'm doing sunset walks. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous, you know? So every once in a while you get one of those, what I call vacation gigs, where it's like, I'm getting paid for this, you know? And in the middle of it, in the middle of shooting, I got COVID. So it was like, you know, they'd already established me in the movie. So I had my stunt, they flew my stunt double out and he stood in for me for a little while. And so I was in a hotel, in a 5-star hotel, getting paid for the week to get over COVID. And I'm viewing the ocean. I don't know. It's not if you're going to do COVID, I think that's the way to do it. You know,
yeah, that's the way I want to do it.
I've heard far worse stories than what I had. So, yeah, you know, that's my one, my first COVID story, you know. So, yeah, so that's an amazing project. And then the next thing coming up for us is The Righteous Gemstones. I'm happy to say we're on our 4th season. Every season gets better and better and better. It looks like from what everybody's telling me, the first 2 episodes are already edited and ready to go. So I heard we're going to start airing in February, which is amazing because usually it takes about 6 months for us to shoot and 6 months to edit. So it's usually a year from the time we start, but they're like, no, man, we got the first 2 episodes done. So we just got 6 more to go. And, this season we have a, you know, an A-list star in our, one of our episodes, and then a Emmy and Golden Globe winning actress that's joining us. And so, yeah, man, I mean, it's the ride that you don't want to end, but you know, it's, everybody's got other projects and stuff going on. So, you know, I'm a little concerned we might be on the button, and HBO has been going through and losing, you know, billions of dollars. So, or Warner Discovery in the cable world. So, you know, I'm not sure. I don't know. I think if people really watch the show, I think that and maybe some Emmys, I think we'll stick around. So it's a big old question, and my heart will be broken if it doesn't happen. So I'm going to do everything in my power to tell everybody, if you have not watched The Righteous Gemstones on HBO, do yourself a favor. It is fantastic. It's 9 episodes a season. All 3 are on there. It's HBO Max. It is, I mean, John Goodman's work is amazing. Edie Patterson is incredible. Walton Goggins, if you're a big fan of Walton Goggins from Fallout, his baby Billy is one of the most iconic characters he's ever played. You know, we've had incredible guest stars every single season. So it does not, and it's a comedy. It's an action comedy, you know, and we just don't have a lot of those these days. And we do need to laugh more, especially now. So
I must confess, James, I'm a huge fan of The Righteous Gemstones. In fact, I'll go even farther than say I'm a huge fan of Danny McBride. I mean, all of his stuff I have loved. And so I have to ask, what's it like to work with Danny McBride?
As this is my son's biggest kind of gig, I turned to my son and said, dude, you're going to be ruined for the rest of your career. Because working for Danny McBride is one of the greatest joys of my entire life, period, end of story. He is generous, creative, talented, funny, caring, driven, the most easiest to work with, the most, he creates an environment where everybody thrives. That's why that show is the way that is. That's why each of those actors could have their own spin-off episode. Every character could have their own spin-off series because of the work that they did. So yeah, I think Danny McBride and David Gordon Green and Jody Hill, that I call it the Holy Trinity, you know, Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost, man. Those three together are just this lethal combination of just brilliance. And they create an environment. And my son feels it too. It's like it creates an environment where he can just, even if he's doing something little, has no lines, he's finding a way to be part of what's going on, because that's the environment that they've set for us. You know, I always liken it, like when I'm doing TV gigs, it's always interesting because, you know, I'm usually a guest star. I have not been a series regular yet. That's a thing I need to kind of get moved beyond being just a guest star after 50 guest stars. But when I'm doing guest stars on TV, it feels like I'm having this incredible Thanksgiving dinner. And then they go, hey, thanks for coming. It's time for you to go, because we're going to do another Thanksgiving feast in the next episode, but you're not part of that. Oh, I know, but I want to stick around. Yeah, we appreciate your company was great. It was great, but you got to go. And what's been the joy for me with Gemstones is that's the first time in my career that I'm going to the Thanksgiving table and I'm being invited back every year. And they want me to come back. And so this season, because of cutbacks of our budgets, I end up doing just 3 episodes. My son ended up doing 6 out of 9 or 7 out of 9. You know, he did a lot more this season. It's like coming home for Thanksgiving, except this family is not dysfunctional. The characters are, the situation is, and I always say to everybody, hey, there is the word fun in dysfunctional. So just so you know. But yeah, for me, it's like being on that show is coming home to Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner, and you really love every single person, and there's no issues with anybody. You can't wait to see them, to catch up and check in with them. The Cassidy Friedman, I mean, Tim Baltz, Tony Calvero, like Adam Devine. I mean, like these people, as my son and I say, they're not just exceptional talents. They're just exceptional people. And Danny sets a tone and draws certain people. That's just the way he's always worked. And that has served him well. I think what's great about the metamorphosis of Danny McBride's storytelling was like Foot Fist Way is where it all kind of starts with everybody. So if you're a real right. Danny McBride fan, Foot right. Fist right. Way is ground zero. That's mm-hmm. that's where he and Jody, that's where that the spark of all it kind of happens. And then Eastbound and Down, the world lives and dies by Kenny Powers. He's such an incredible narcissist that everything revolves. It's Kenny's world. You're just visiting, and fuck you if you don't get it. You know what I mean? Like, so the reality is like, it's Kenny Powers' world. So the stories all only revolve around one character. That's it. It lives or dies by one character. Then it goes on to Vice Principals, where you have, like, you split it between him and Walton Goggins, and you even have a little bit of Bill Murray in there, and then you have the other opposing. So you have like this little triangulation, then Edie Patterson kind of comes in there a little bit. So, you know, like, but for the most part, it's really the storyline's being split between these two characters. And then you have Gemstones, which is, it is 23andMe. It is a family tree with deep, deep roots that you can, you can turn on any story. You could go backwards in time. They do flashbacks every season. Then all of a sudden there's this supernatural element where like dead characters are coming back to life. So it's really coming down to what I love about Gemstones is it feels like there's unended or unlimiting possibility of storyline, because it's not revolving around just Jesse Gemstone. And so all of a sudden you have this like web of, you know, storyline possibilities. I would love for it to go 10 years. You know, now the way everybody's kind of crying it on our last week of set, it's like a lot of people are feeling the goodbye. And I'm like, what? You know, it's like, what about see you next season? Like, let's see what, you know. So we're in question now. So yeah, man, if you haven't done so already, I'm sure you already have, but like, get everybody to watch this damn show, because it's the eyes and the downloads and that's what counts.
So has there been a favorite scene that you have done as Chad with your son? Because I think there, if I remember correctly, there's quite a few over the seasons of interaction between.
Yeah, we never had, and this is the thing they were kind of promising for a bit, if we never had a one-on-one interaction between Pontius and Chad, I was kind of hoping we would. So if we get a season 5, I'm going to try to put their feet to the fire on that. So, hey, man, you promised me a scene with my son. It just hasn't happened. We've been in scenes together. But we've never had any interaction with each other, which is something I would really kind of love to do. Favorite scene? Yeah, I think for me, it was, it became like a meme for a little bit, you know, like we're going to what was it? It was like this whole little, let's get some craft beers and, you know, sink some suds, you know, it was like, I think when Chad became the outcast of the group, you know, like he's divorced and Danny like, I don't know, I've never been divorced before. You know, what's that, you know, happy wife, happy life. It's like, well, what's the thing for divorce? It's like, I don't know. That's not my problem. Like, you know, so for me, I liked, and I always had like a kind of a thing with Chad was like season 1 was sad Chad, you know, like he's in trouble. And then season 2 was kind of mad, you know, mad. And then season 3 is like glad, you know, and then like, you know, then I got like, I had some interesting arcs, some really good stuff in season 4. But yeah, for me, I like that scene. I really loved that when Chad becomes, he thinks it's really great to be the lone wolf, you know, and it's not really kind of working out because it just makes it worse. And then I love that when all of us and with Jay LaRose and with Troy, like we call them the goon squad, you know, Jody and I, like Danny's boys, it's like, when we had the coin, you know, we did it. You know, you know, the sealing the bond. It just felt like very, Knights of the Round Table, kind of like Robin Hood, you know, kind of like we all, you know, it's like the A-team, you know, we all had kind of like, you know, yeah. So it was feeling that those are two that kind of stick out for me as my favorites so far. And I really also like that other scene when we're, you know, when they're doing like a kind of Oprah-esque kind of couples counseling with Mandy and I. Jesse and Amber are really trying to kind of like get us back together, the couples therapy, you know, like that scene's pretty solid for me. Like, you know, that's got all kinds of gold in there.
I was going to say, I remember that vividly in regards to, because that was one of the, that was season 2's
last. Yeah, that was season 2. That was, that's it, man. Like, yeah. I was like, wow, guys, you guys gave me the, like, it was a gift, you know. It was like, oh no, we wrote for you, man. Like I was like, so yeah, that was the way they kind of ended that season. It was like only one other scene after that, I think. Yeah. But yeah, left it. It was a great way. And my son had the same thing for season 2 as well, is him going, oh no, it was season 3, him going off. No, it's season 2. Him going off to the Citadel. So yeah, mm-hmm. No, that was season 3. I can't.
I think that was three.
So for him, he had the kind of like, you know, lingering thing of like, he's going off to the Citadel and, you know, we'll see how that goes. So mm-hmm. I know how it goes, but I can't tell you that. I'd have to shoot you. I'd have to kill you.
We don't want that. Well, James, let's start kind of wrapping up here. Again, as I said, I could talk to you all night long stories.
Whenever I do these, I'm always like, you know, like we'll go as long as you want to go. You can edit it down. You can cut it into various things. But, you know, when you got me, as you said, I'm a busy dude. So when I say to people, I'm like, when you got me, you got me. So, you know, get as much information and intel as you possibly can.
Okay, you got it. I'm going to ask you just a couple more questions here, and we'll start with this one. And I think I know the answer because I think you maybe alluded to it. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer to be on the stage? Do you prefer to work television? Or do you prefer to be on the movie set?
That is a very good question. I would like to get back on the stage. I'd like to be able to afford to get back on the stage. I always loved being on a movie set. And now Gemstone's kind of wrecked me for that because I hadn't had the experience I had done like 3.5 seasons of Treme, but I kind of came in, did my thing and left. And then I did, you know, American Horse. For me, when I did the run of the picture for Deepwater Horizon, where I had 12 weeks of work, I was there for the first day of shooting all the way till the end. And any day that I wasn't shooting, Peter Berg sent us off to drill school so that we learned about the oil industry and what our characters should know. So for me, I've always had the most incredible experiences working on film, especially something along those lines, even a Trumbo or a Spencer Confidential. Like I'm most happiest on set, and my experience is mostly known as a film actor up until now. Gemstones, I've never done multiple I've never done 4 seasons or 20 episodes. So this is the first time for me. Yeah, I mostly feel comfortable on a film set because it's one linear story, and that every single person is part of this one story, as opposed to this week we're doing this, and then tomorrow we're going to do something else. And, you know, now they've been doing a lot what's called block shooting. So they shoot by location. So, you know, you may be doing multiple episodes in one particular day, but it's not this one linear story. So for me, my experiences have been most joyful. I just enjoy being on set, period. I think the two places I'm most happy and comfortable are at home with my family and on set. everywhere else I'm not really comfortable, you know, like even when I go to New York or I go to Los Angeles or other places, I'm comfortable at home, you know, in New Orleans, but I work in both New York and LA. So it's a different thing, but I feel most comfortable on set, period. But for me, film, I think film is number one. I'd love to have that same now experience of the theater. And that's what I'm exploring now is to get back to something that was, you know, always been my thing.
So do you have any upcoming projects that you would like to talk about that maybe we didn't get a chance to fully discuss or discuss at all?
Yeah.
Let everybody know what you got coming up.
Yeah, I think, you know, if those who are actors who are listening and really want to get down and learn something about self-tapes, I have 2,000 students all over the world online. So if there are actors out there who are really looking to kind of master and figure out their self-tapes, oncamerworkouts.com, you know, come my way. I got classes, you know, 2 classes a week, and then I do privates every day, 7 days a week. And then, you know, in terms of projects coming up, I'm up for some things that are pretty exciting that I can't talk about. Hopefully next time you and I will get together, we can kind of talk about them then.
Absolutely.
There are feature films that I'm developing. There are pilots that I started shooting and stopped that I want to pick back up. I did this thing called That Guy, which is this kind of like Curb Your Enthusiasm meets Louie. And it's about what it's like to be what I call myself a journeyman actor. It's like, I'm a that guy, you know, it's like between somebody and nobody, that guy. So there is this kind of like, I think there's something interesting and funny about being in fame purgatory. You're not known and you're not unknown, but you're not famous and you're not rich. So you're kind of like, you know, you're just caught in this, you know, I go places and people are like, wow, you look really familiar. It's like, yeah. It's like, are you my son's soccer coach? And I was like, no. Yeah, you were part of the real estate. No, I'm an actor. Oh yeah. My friend does extra work. I was like, no, I don't do background work. No, you know. So there's something kind of humbling about it. And then also, you know, it kind of messes with your ego a little bit too, which is not a bad thing. That, you know, you did all this work and nobody recognizes who the hell you are. So, you know, in one way, I like to be able to not be pegged as, oh, there's the guy that does that. You know, that's that, it's that guy that does this. And then on the other hand, you know, like I kind of go like, well, you know, I would like some acknowledgement. I mean, I'm 170 credits in. I've worked opposite Oscar winners on TV and film, and no one goes, man, that scene was great till that guy came in there, you know? So like, I feel like I'm holding my own with the best in the business. So yeah, I'm just interested to see what this next phase of things are. You know, I think I'm going to spend a little more time, you know, trying to develop projects to take to New York or LA, or maybe just develop them here in New Orleans. So we'll see.
Well, do you have a website or social media that you would like folks to know about?
Yeah, you can keep tabs. I'm on Instagram @JamesDumont. That's DUMONT. And then my classes are on camera. Then on Instagram, on camera workouts. Twitter, I'm James K. Dumont. I don't do Twitter too much because it's just too many trolls in there. And so, and then I have a Facebook page, but you know, like I'm all full on person on both New York and LA pages. I have like 5,000 each. So like Instagram is probably my go-to. People can kind of find me there. I also have a lot of really great free stuff on camera workouts. A lot of great free stuff on my personal Instagram. I show auditions from self-tape all the way to the job. I, you know, sometimes I'm on, you know, red carpets and things like that. So there's some cool stuff in there. So yeah, those are Instagram is my kind of go-to. I was on Facebook for a little while, but not so much anymore.
Okay. James, yeah. This has been a blast. Thank you so very much for sitting down and chatting with me. And I will absolutely take you up on the offer. If you want to come back and talk about these great projects that are in coming down the pike, as they say, you yep. by all means are more than welcome to come back on.
Love it. Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
You're quite welcome. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to wrap things up right after this quick break. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with James Dumont, talking about his various projects such as American Sports Story, Unit 234, and The Righteous Gemstones. And as I said in the conversation to James, I would love to have him come back on in the near future because we didn't even scratch the surface of his career. The roles that he has had, the individuals he got to share the spotlight with, so to speak, is amazing. And so, again, I hope that I'll get the opportunity to have James come back on and we can talk about all of those other roles that we didn't get a chance to touch base on. And by the way, as I promised James, watch The Righteous Gemstones. It's funny. I've seen all three seasons. You know there's a fourth one coming out at the beginning of next year. It's a great show. If you love comedy, you'll love this show. I guarantee it. So check it out. It's on HBO Max. So now let me tell you where you can get in touch with me if you have a question about this episode or any episode for that matter. First of all, you could shoot me an email if you like. JohnOrlando@pvdcast.com is the email address. You can leave me a message over on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for @PVDcast. You can even find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about this podcast and where they can hear it. Well, there's a bunch of different avenues for that. First off, PVDcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and the best place to get every single episode of this beloved podcast. But you can also catch it through all those major podcasting outlets or apps. All you have to do is go to the search bar of your favorite podcasting outlet or app, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And by the way, since we're talking about your favorite outlets and apps, you need to do me a favor, please. You need to rate and review. Rating and reviewing pushes me up through the algorithm, and it's super important for everyone involved in podcasting. The podcasters, the outlets, everybody needs to know this data, so it would help me out tremendously. Again, rate and review. And by the way, if you haven't already, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVDcast. But there's an even easier way where you can listen to each week's episode, and that is through a little live broadcast I do Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page of the PVDcast. You can hear the week's episode that way as well. So there you go. Through Facebook, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, or PVDcast.com. Those are three easy avenues to hear the show. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out the episode. And I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. We'll be right back. following has been a presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2024.